Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 694, titled The Perfect War Machine, and this program is being recorded on October 18th of the year 2009. The title of the broadcast, The Perfect War Machine, alludes to the SV40, or Simian Virus 40, which is a subject that I've covered intermittently on this broadcast for, more than 10 years now, probably going back to 1996, and our first visit with Ed Haslam. SV40 is a monkey virus, which has been communicated to human beings primarily through contamination of the kidneys on which vaccines were grown. The SV40 virus has found its way into human beings through vaccines, and SV40 is a deadly cancer-causing virus. In many broadcasts over the years, most recently in For the Record 690, I've discussed the use of cancer as an assassination weapon. And of course, we've also talked about SV40 and the epidemic of soft tissue cancers that virus has apparently spawned, or at least contributed to in a big way. I thought that in order to further clarify the way in which a virus could be weaponized and used in order to deliberately produce cancer, and also to shed some light on how cancers can be caused by viruses in general, we would go into just how it is that SV40 causes cancer, what it actually does at the molecular and cellular level. Now, the broadcast that I'm about to do, or that we're doing right now, is perhaps even more pedantic than usual, and that's pretty pedantic for these broadcasts, due to the fact that we're going to be going through some relatively complex biological mechanisms that are set forth, I think, pretty clearly in the book The Virus and the Vaccine. It was co-authored by Debbie Bookshin and Jim Schumacher. It's subtitled The True Story of a Cancer-Causing Monkey Virus, Contaminated Polio Vaccine, and the Millions of Americans Exposed. The book was published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press, and it was copyrighted in, just one second, 2004 by Debbie Bookshin and Jim Schumacher. Now, in a chapter from which, basically, this broadcast gets its name, The Perfect War Machine, the authors go into just how SV40 causes cancer. This, by the way, was discussed at some length in For the Record program number 198. That was taken from an Atlantic Monthly article by these same two authors. But basically, SV40 causes cancer through a primary agent, which is a protein called large T antigen. And that deadly cancer-causing protein, along with small T antigen, another protein produced by SV40 and some other agents that it produces, do a number of things simultaneously to cause cells to become carcinogenic and ultimately to kill the organism that has been invaded by SV40. Now, I'm going to do my best to provide a summary and encapsulated version of how these mechanisms work. Then we're actually going to read about them from the text. But again, the main agent for SV40, the perfect war machine, because it really is a protein called large T antigen. It is a deadly carcinogen. And one of the things that it does is to neutralize a gene called P53 and also some proteins called RB proteins. Both RB proteins and the P53 gene function in a fashion which could be thought of as something of a fail-safe mechanism to see to it that damaged cells don't reproduce. What RB proteins and P53 combine to do is to see to it that if a cell becomes a damaged cell during reproduction, then that cell is automatically killed so as not to become carcinogenic or pathogenic in some way. Large T antigen neutralizes both the RB proteins and the P53 gene, and indeed for a cell to become carcinogenic, both of them need to be neutralized, both the P53 gene and the RB proteins. In addition, there are a couple of oncogenes, or genes which, when activated, cause unlimited cell growth. Basically, they cause, in effect, cells to become carcinogenic and to basically begin reproducing in an uncontrolled fashion. Those two genes are called the MET oncogene, that's M-E-T, and the other is called NOTCH1. And large T antigen and SV40 activate both the MET oncogene and the NOTCH1 gene. Also, SV40 basically produces an effect on the nucleus of a cell, which one researcher described as looking like a bomb went off inside of the cell. It scrambles the genetic material of the cell. And because it also neutralizes the RB proteins and the P53 gene, whereas normally the cell would die, the cell is able to go on living. And the SV40 also, enlarged T antigen, also activate two genes, both of which are essential for a cell to become carcinogenic. Again, those are the MET oncogene and NOTCH1. In addition, SV40 also causes cells that have been infected by it to produce chemicals which cause neighboring cells to activate their NOTCH1 and MET oncogenes as well, even though they have not been invaded themselves by SV40. So another of the things that SV40 does is to cause infected cells to produce cells which in turn produce uninfected or cause uninfected adjacent cells to become carcinogenic by activating MET and NOTCH1. In addition, there is a sort of stealth factor for SV40, really a couple of different stealth factors. One is the fact that SV40 can cause a cell to become malignant, and then even after the initial traces of SV40 have disappeared, including the large T antigen protein, the cell itself not only remains malignant, but because the immune system no longer has the large T antigen with which to react, the malignant cells are able to hide from the immune system. Large T antigen is a deadly carcinogen. It does activate the immune system, as do cancer cells. What the stealth factor for SV40 enables it to do is to cause a cell to become malignant, but then when the original traces of SV40 and large T antigen have disappeared, it therefore becomes, to a certain extent at least, undetectable or much less detectable to the immune system. In addition, and this is all produced by SV40, when cells are invaded by SV40, SV40 causes the production of an enzyme called VEGH. And what that does, actually, what VEGH does, is to produce the blood vessels, the supply of blood vessels that is necessary to produce, it's VEGF. It causes VEGF. SV40 produces VEGF, not VEGH. And that stimulates the production of the blood vessels essential to feed a tumor and to cause it to grow. In addition, SV40 also basically produces something called telomerase. I may be mispronouncing that, but that is an enzyme which causes the fibers at the ends of the genetic material within the cells to remain large, whereas as cells normally reproduce, the telomeres, those fibers at the end of the genetic material, reduce in size, and that has the effect of limiting the lifespan of the reproducing cell culture. The cell culture cannot continue to reproduce indefinitely, but with the production of telomerase, it enables those cells to begin reproducing, basically ad infinitum. And that, combined with the activation of MET and NOTCH1 and all of the other interactive mechanisms that I've talked about, produce a carcinogenic, basically produce a malignant cell. It produces carcinogenesis. So that, in a nutshell, is how SV40 produces cancer. And what I'm going to do is to read about the discovery of these mechanisms and how they work together. One of the central people in the narrative that I'm about to present is Dr. Michele Carboni. He's an Italian physician who's been working in the Chicago area for quite some time and in many ways is sort of the Albert Einstein of SV40 research. He has in many ways driven the research into SV40 and the contamination of the polio vaccine with the deadly carcinogenic SV40. So here is how the perfect war machine, SV40, works. Magnified 50,000 times under an electron microscope, SV40 doesn't seem particularly menacing. In contrast to the portentous, worm-like shape of some more notorious viruses such as Ebola, SV40 looks almost pretty, bluish snowflakes against a field of white. It owes its delicate appearance to its isohedral triangular scaffolding, a geometric 20-sided protein skin that surrounds its lone circular double strand of DNA. Compact and efficient, the DNA strand contains only 5,243 base pairs, a lean life form compared to the 4 million base pairs of DNA contained in even a simple bacterium. SV40 is as simple as it is small. The human genome codes for 150,000 proteins, while SV40 codes for just 6, although some scientists believe they have recently discovered a 7th. 3 of those proteins make up its protein skin. Of the remaining proteins, 1 regulates the virus's growth, and the 2 others are the virus's tumor-causing proteins, hence the name T-antigen for tumor-causing antigen. The large T antigen, distinguished by its capital T, is about 700 amino acids in length, while its sister protein, the small T antigen, designated with a lowercase t, embodies 174 amino acids. Scientists often refer to these 2 tumor-causing proteins by the shorthand designations of TAG for the large T antigen and TAG with a small t for the small T antigen. These 2 tumor antigens, particularly the large T antigen, are highly oncogenic. Carboni describes large T antigen as the most oncogenic protein ever discovered, unquote. It is unique, he says, in its ability to cause cancer when set loose inside certain types of cells. To understand how a cell becomes cancerous, it helps to know something about the multi-layered protections bequeathed by nature to help prevent cells from becoming cancerous. It is only when these protective mechanisms are breached that the cell takes its deadly turn toward immortality. Simply put, for a cell to become cancerous, 3 things have to happen. The first of these is that the cell has to lose the function of those genes that restrain cell growth and prevent malignancy, the cellular breaks, so to speak. Secondly, the cell has to receive a stimulating signal from those genes called oncogenes that cause tumor cells to grow in the first place. Finally, the cell's normal limit on how many times it can divide must be overcome. Very simply, again, those 3 things. The first is that the cell has to, repeating of course, the first is that the cell has to lose the function of those genes that restrain cell growth and prevent malignancy, the cellular breaks, so to speak. Secondly, the cell has to receive a stimulating signal from those genes called oncogenes that cause tumor cells to grow in the first place. Finally, the cell's normal limit on how many times it can divide must be overcome. And as we're about to see, and as I encapsulated, hopefully to a certain extent comprehensibly, SV40 basically accomplishes all 3 of those things. And then the authors, Debbie Bookchin and Jim Schumacher, go into how the proteins work inside of cells. And describing the 3 things that have to be done. The first of these protections involve a series of tumor suppressor genes known as P53 and the RB genes. When a cell begins to divide in the process known as mitosis, a small army of quality control agents goes to work. Running up and down the cell's DNA like a band of frenetic electricians looking for loose wiring in an apartment complex, these genes and proteins work together in a succession of intricately linked mechanisms to scrutinize the DNA's integrity. If at any stage of cell division they detect DNA abnormalities, mitosis is halted and the damage is repaired. If the damage cannot be repaired, another set of genes is activated and the cell undergoes apoptosis, the term for programmed cell death. The cell essentially commits suicide. The principle in this elaborate regulatory dance is called P53. Now again, the P53 is a gene. Continuing, Arnold J. Levine, former president of Rockefeller University in New York City and one of the discoverers of P53, says that 60% of all cancers involve some sort of damage, mutation, or inactivation of the gene. The P53 gene is central to human cancers, he explains, describing it as, quote, the first line of defense against cancer formation, unquote. If P53 is not functioning properly, a cell with altered DNA may undergo mitosis instead of dying, as it should. If the DNA alterations are such that the cell continues to reproduce wildly, that is the beginning of a cancer. In July of 1997, in two groundbreaking papers published in the journal Nature Medicine, Carboni and his collaborators examined how SV40's large T antigen is able to strangle P53 and other crucial tumor suppressor genes in human mesothelial cells. Now, by the way, the mesothelial tissue is one of the layers of tissue in the lungs. It's sort of a middle layer of tissue, and it is descended, it evolves from one of the earliest layers of tissue that is formed by as the human embryo develops. For this reason, as we're about to see, it's very rich in P53, and the fact that the mesothelial tissue is so rich in P53 causes large T antigen to bind excessively to the P53, and that brings the SV40 into a sort of symbiosis with the mesothelial tissue. SV40 grows slowly enough that it doesn't activate the immune system sufficiently to neutralize the cells, and eventually those mesothelial cells become carcinogenic. Again, this is a complex process. It's described in detail in just a little bit, but that's what we're talking about now, is the mesothelial cells and how the T antigen in SV40 affects the P53 in mesothelial tissue. Continuing, one of the paradoxes about mesotheliomas is that human mesotheliomas are rich in normal P53, and yet they are one of the most deadly human cancers. Why, if there is an abundance of this cancer-suppressing gene, is the cancer itself so aggressive? Carboni's experiments show that in human mesotheliomas, large T antigen attacks P53, binding it so that it cannot function properly even though the gene is present in large quantities. In effect, it doesn't matter how much P53 is present in the mesotheliomas, SV40 produces enough T antigen to disable all of it. In the companion Nature Medicine study, Antonio Giordano, then at the Kimmel Cancer Center in Philadelphia, described how large T antigen inhibits a second series of anti-cancer proteins called RBs, which together serve as the final gatekeepers in cellular division. They thus serve as a second layer of cellular protection against cancer. If P53 fails, the RBs can step in and stop genetically defective cells from dividing. Giordano found that in mesotheliomas, SV40 T antigen was crippling the RBs. So again, notice here, summing up this first part of the analysis, that SV40 produces T antigen, which neutralizes both the P53 gene and the RB proteins, which guard against the reproduction of defective cells and which assure that defective cells will basically, in effect, commit suicide. That is, they will experience apoptosis. So that's one of the things that SV40 through large T antigen does. It neutralizes P53 and the RB proteins. Continuing with the analysis presented by Schumacher and Bookchin, together the Carboni and Giordano studies established that SV40 is uniquely oncogenic in human mesotheliomas. Using a single protein, large T antigen, SV40 can disable two of the body's most important cancer-suppressing systems simultaneously. No other cancer-causing virus has that capacity. For example, human papillomavirus, which causes cervical cancer, must produce two proteins, E6 and E7, to inactivate P53 and the RBs, respectively. SV40 needs only one, large T antigen. For this reason, Arnold Levine calls large T antigen a remarkable protein, unquote. But why mesotheliomas? With so many different cells and organs to choose from, why was SV40 turning up so frequently in this relatively rare cancer? Carboni reviewed the literature on the virus. He discovered that most studies of SV40's behavior in human cells had examined what happened when the virus invaded fibroblasts, specialized connective tissue cells. This was because large amounts of the tissue type were readily available to research laboratories in the form of human foreskin specimens. Mesothelial cells, however, are dramatically different from fibroblasts. They are the last remnants of the central embryonic layer called the mesoderm and are a much more primitive cell type than fibroblasts. Carboni decided to conduct an experiment comparing SV40's infection of human fibroblasts with SV40 infection of human mesothelial cells. The results of the study completely changed the established view of what happens when SV40 infects human cells. Viruses such as SV40 enter a cell with the object of replicating, not causing tumors. In the normal life cycle of a virus, it invades a host cell, hijacks the cell's own reproductive machinery, and proceeds to make thousands upon thousands of copies of itself inside the cell. Eventually, the host cell becomes loaded with virus to the point that it can no longer hold all of the invaders. The viruses either bud forth from the cell or burst the cell open, killing it in either case. Thousands of these newly liberated viruses then rush to attack other cells, and the infective process continues. In this scenario, the virus may make the host ill, but it doesn't cause cancer because the infected cells die. This is exactly the situation that unfolds when SV40 infects a human fibroblast cell. The replication of SV40 eventually fills the cell with virus and causes it to first burst and then die. Because early SV40 studies centered on fibroblast cells, it was assumed that the virus was harmless to human cells. But mesothelial cells contain 4 to 5 times more P53 than human fibroblasts. Carboni discovered that in mesothelial cells, the large T antigen becomes preoccupied with binding to the excessive P53 present in the cells. This, in turn, dramatically retards the pace of SV40 replication, so much so that the virus achieves a parasitic symbiosis with the mesothelial cells in which it multiplies so slowly that it does not burst the cell. Now, the mesothelial cells can divide unchecked. Carboni and his colleagues discovered SV40 caused mesothelial cells to become malignant at a rate 1,000 times that of fibroblasts. Quote, "What we found was that SV40 does different things in different cells and organs," Carboni says. "In mesothelial cells, it doesn't kill them, but it drives them to malignant growth," unquote. Whether this same process is at work in other SV40-related cancers remains to be investigated. What makes a cell malignant? Once again, SV40 can serve as the source of the actual genetic changes that make normal cells cancerous. Again, the virus can do it in more than one way. One is through human chromosome damage by adding or deleting whole sections of DNA or reshuffling the genes onto 23 pairs of chromosomes contained in the cell's nucleus. Joseph R. Testa, director of the Human Genetics Program at Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia, says that once SV40 is finished with a cell, it looks like somebody set off a bomb inside the cell's nucleus because of all of these chromosome rearrangements. Another way SV40 induces malignancy is to accelerate cell growth. An Italian team of scientists discovered that T antigen triggers an activation signal or oncogene in the cell called MET that stimulates growth factors. This causes the mesothelial cell to go from a resting phase to a replicating phase, essentially flipping on the switch for cellular growth to fast forward. And just as cells have more than one break, P53 and the RBs, they also have more than one accelerator. Carboni's colleague Bacchetta discovered that SV40 can also activate a gene called NOTCH1 that pushes the cell to divide. SV40 thus can inactivate two key cellular breaks and activate two key accelerators all by itself. Knocking out a cell's brakes and kicking on its accelerator is still not sufficient to produce unchecked tumor growth. Nature blessed the body with an additional anti-cancer feature. Cells have a limited lifespan. A healthy cell will reproduce itself only a finite number of times before it dies. That is because each time a cell divides, the telomeres, a spindle of microfibers at the ends of each chromosome, shorten a little bit. In classical mythology, three goddesses, the Fates, wove together the fabric of a person's life, determining how long he or she would live. Telomeres are literally the threads of life. They determine the natural lifespan of all cells. Each time a cell divides, a little piece of the thread gets used up and the telomeres get shorter. Once they have shortened beyond a certain point, the cell and all the daughter cells which derive from it have used up all their allotted thread. They cannot divide any longer and they die, and this is why most scientists believe that all human beings, no matter how healthy, have an upper limit to their lifespans. Now, what we're going to see here is how SV40 basically can cause the telomeres to lengthen, thus neutralizing this inherent limitation on cellular lifespan. Bear in mind that in addition to rearranging whole sections of chromosomes, so much so that Joseph Testa, as we saw, looking through a microscope at the nucleus of a cell that had been infected with SV40, said it looks like somebody set off a bomb inside of the cell's nucleus. In addition to rearranging the genetic material, and in addition to activating the MET and or NOTCH1 genes, as we're about to see, SV40 also enables the telomeres, or it restructures the telomeres in such a way as to permit unlimited cell growth. And it does this by stimulating the production of telomerase. The authors write about this, saying, interestingly, this phenomenon was discovered, the phenomenon of the fact that all cells have a certain lifespan. Interestingly, this phenomenon was discovered in the 1960s by Leonard Hayflick as he was perfecting his human cell substrata WI-38. During his work on WI-38, Hayflick discovered that after dividing 40 to 60 times, his strain of human diploid cells inevitably died. Even if they had been frozen for years, once they were thawed and began dividing again, their total number of doublings never exceeded this preordained amount. Nature had programmed a natural lifespan or senescence into every cell. Today, the number of divisions a cell can undergo before dying is known as the Hayflick limit, in honor of the scientist whose discovery opened up an entire new field of inquiry called gerontology. Because of the Hayflick limit, even those cells in which P53 has been disabled or growth factors have been stimulated are still subject to this internal limit and usually enter its so-called crisis and die after dividing 40 or so times. And as we're going to see, SV40 basically neutralizes that and permits the cells to become immortal cancer cells. And we're going to continue with this analysis on side two of this broadcast. For background about SV40 and some of the work that I've done about AIDS as a deliberately created disease and a great many other subjects, SpitfireList.com. It's the foremost website for information of this kind. Basically, I've got all of my life's work up on that website for download for free, so please avail yourselves of it. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 694, The Perfect War Machine. This program is being recorded on October 18th of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.